Paramahamsa Parivajaka Acharya. Ashtotra Satya Sri Sri Maharaj Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Gaur Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Purishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tanamane. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharane Niravishesha Sunyavari Paschati Sthana. Good reminder, all cell phones off. So good evening to everybody. And welcome back to school, because I think both the colleges and the other schools start tomorrow, so it's always a time when the temple gets packed. I don't know if because the students are afraid what's going to happen in school or because it's more convenient to be in town, but we wish you all the best in the coming year. I thought that because school is starting tomorrow, that this evening we would discuss a little bit of a history lesson. Myself and the small committee of devotees for the last several years, we've been working on a constitution for ISKCON. And so we're shooting for the 50th anniversary of ISKCON to have this project done. That's 2016. And so I thought a constitution for ISKCON, it needs some basis in order to be accepted by the body of devotees. And so in order to facilitate that, I got the idea to develop a little seminar or courses on the history of ISKCON. And so tonight what I want to present for you is one of the series of talks that I've had and I've prepared on the history of ISKCON. And the realization I've had, particularly in regard to the lesson we're going to talk about tonight, which is the formation, the legal formation of ISKCON, is that the history of ISKCON in terms of the formation of the corporation, it's like an iceberg. An iceberg, everyone knows what an iceberg is, right? So an iceberg, there's just a little tip above the water, right? But below the water, there is a massive structure. And so that's like the history of ISKCON in terms of the formation. What we saw in the summer of 1966 was just the tip of the iceberg of what the history of ISKCON is really all about. And so I want to read for you a description of the formation that's taken from the biography of Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita by Satrup Das Goswami, so that you can get some idea of what that tip was, and then we're going to discuss what the big mass under the water is as well. So how many of you been to 22nd Avenue here? How many people have been to 22nd Avenue? Pretty good number. Yeah, 26 Sixth Avenue is a very small place. Very small place, and in the 1960s, probably a pretty hot place in the middle of July also. But there in that small storefront, Prabhupada was lecturing, and then he sprung a surprise on his audience, and that surprise was the legal formation of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And so here's a little description of that scene. Prabhupada is lecturing. Mr. Goldsmith was a lawyer. Mr. Goldsmith, wearing slacks and a shirt and tie, sits on the floor near the door, listening earnestly to the lecture, despite the distracting noises from the neighborhood. Prabhupada had been explaining how scholars mislead innocent people with non-devotional interpretations of Bhagavad Gita, and now, in recognition of the attorney's respectable presence, and as if to catch Mr. Goldsmith's attention better, he introduced him into the talk. Prabhupada speaking, "I will give a practical example of how things are misinterpreted. Just like our president, Mr. Goldsmith. He knows that expert lawyers, by interpretation, can do so many things. When I was in Calcutta, there was a rent tax passed by the government, and some expert lawyer changed the whole thing by his interpretations. The government had to reenact the whole law because their purpose was foiled by the interpretation of this lawyer. So we are not out for foiling the purpose of Krishna, for which the Bhagavad Gita was spoken. But unauthorized persons are trying to foil the purpose of Krishna. Therefore, that is unauthorized." Then Prabhupada turns to Mr. Goldsmith. "All right, Mr. Goldsmith, you can ask anything." Mr. Goldsmith stands, and to the surprise of the people gathered, he makes a short announcement asking for signers on an incorporation document for the Swami's new religious movement. Srila Prabhupada. "They are present. You can take their addresses now." Mr. Goldsmith, "I can take them now? Yes?" Prabhupada, "Yes, you can. Bill, you can give your address. And Raphael, you give yours. And Don, Roy, Mr. Green?" As the meeting breaks up, those called on to sign as trustees come forward, standing around in a little storefront, waiting to leaf curiously through the pages the lawyer had produced from his thin attaché and to sign as he directs. Yet not a soul among them is committed to Krishna consciousness. None of them know exactly what the half dozen legal-sized type papers mean, except that Swamiji is forming a society. That is the tip of the iceberg, that Swamiji is forming a society, and as surprised as they were, they signed on. Actually, I tried to go to the New York State Department of Corporations and see if I could get that document. Sometimes states, they have a photocopy of the corporation documents there, and you can go there and you can actually get it. I mean, what a prize that would be to see Prabhupada's signature and all these other people that signed. I wonder if you could interpret their handwriting, how surprised they were that they were signing this document that they didn't know anything about. But unfortunately, I couldn't get that document, and not yet at least. I'm going to keep trying to do that. But as I say, this is just the tip of the iceberg of what is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Obviously, it's a legal organization, but what's behind this simple act of signing a paper there? That's an iceberg worth of inspiration and direction that comes all the way from the Supreme Lord himself. So I'm going to go back, I'm going to take you back in time to the time of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his biographer Lochan Das Thakur. Lochan Das Thakur writes in his biography Sri Chaitanya Mangalo of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu of a statement made by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself which is the first part of that iceberg that's underneath the ocean. I'm sure most of you are familiar with the quotation, Morsena Bhakta. Is everyone familiar with that? Morsena Bhakta Vyabhi Tataya. Lord Chaitanya is describing that if sinful people escape and give up religious principles to go to far off countries, then my Senapati Bhakta will come to that at that time to give them Krishna consciousness. Senapati means a military field commander. And so this verse indicates that the fact that an organization exists is particularly important, because if you know, anybody been in the service here? The Army, Navy, anybody? Anybody been there? Not that many people, really. Wow. Well, if you know anything about an Army or a Navy or any kind of military service, you couldn't get more organized than that. Very organized for a particular purpose. To achieve a particular mission, there has to be organization. And so this quotation from Sri Chaitanya Mangala, referring to a military field commander, implies that organization is necessary to accomplish the purposes, your purposes. And the particular purposes of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness we're generally familiar with is to spread the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so this requires organization. And this is scriptural evidence, if you will, of the fact that organization is required. And what is the mission that that organization is meant to accomplish? For that, we can go to another scriptural reference, and it's a verse that we quote quite often, especially in line with when we do Pushpanjali or we honor our parampara. We chant this verse, I'm sure you'll be familiar with it. Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. When will Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada, who has established within this material world the mission to fulfill the desire of Lord Chaitanya, give me shelter at his lotus feet? So Rupa Goswami, he established a mission. His mission was to fulfill the desire of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So mission requires organization. If you have a specific purpose you want to accomplish, you better get yourself organized if you want to see it come to fruition. And so Rupa Goswami was the inspiration. He understood this. This is from Srila Prabhupada's purport from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where he talks about this verse. Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam. He says, now again, by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the same feelings are being spread all over the world by the servants of the Goswamis, and devotees who are pure and simple will appreciate this attempt. So Prabhupada links his own organization, ISKCON, with this idea of mission. And that mission is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission, to spread the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu all over the world. And to do that, he started that ISKCON Society in that small little storefront in the summer of 1966 with a bunch of young people, men and women, who really had no idea of the depth of where he was coming from when he started his society. Yet they cooperated and the mission goes on. And to this very day, we have that same mission ourselves. And we're serving Rupa Goswami's desire and Lord Chaitanya's desire by trying to fulfill the purposes of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So those are some scriptural references, but there's more. More in terms of organization. Jiva Goswami, one of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, who specifically were directed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to spread this Krishna consciousness movement, at the end of each chapter of his Satsandarbhas, he wrote the name of an organization. Does anybody know what the name of that organization was? By chance? The Vishwa, Sri Vishwa Vaishnava Raja Sabha. Now, he wrote that the Vishnu Vaishnava Rava Sabha refers to the society which is composed of those Vaishnavas who are the kings, the foremost, of all Vaishnavas present in this world. And it's meant to fulfill and offer respects to Srila Rupa Goswami and Srila Sanatana Goswami. So it was an organization, it was a society of devotees that Jiva Goswami was referring to, and Jiva Goswami established, that was meant to serve the desires of Srila Rupa Goswami, Srila Sanatana Goswami, whose lives were sold out to the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so right from the very beginning of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, there was this idea of an association, a society, an organization of devotees who would come forward and come together and utilize that form for spreading Krishna consciousness, that united worldwide preaching endeavor. It requires form and direction of an organization. And we see that in the history of Vaishnavism, Gaudiya Vaishnavism, since that time, the reliance that we can have on an organization has been particularly important. After the Goswamis and the immediate followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had departed this world, there was a period of time for about 100 years prior to the 1600s, say like in the 1500s. There was a period of about 100 years where in Vrindavan, particularly, the Vaishnavas were scattered, were disunited, and were involved primarily in their own independent bhajan because they were oppressed by the Mughal rulers of that time. And so we find that there's about a 100-year period, as they say, where Gaudiya Vaishnavism in Vrindavan was essentially very silent. There wasn't much going on. Again, there were devotees there and they were doing their bhajan, but independently, disunited. And at that time, there was another great reviver of Krishna consciousness who appeared, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And it's described by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur that Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur was a protector or a guardian of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And what he particularly did is that he went to Vrindavan and he gathered, collected up, assembled all the devotees, consolidated them, and what had happened was that there was no active propagation. And we know active propagation of Krishna consciousness is the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but nothing like that was going on in Vrindavan. In Bengal and Orissa, that was going on, but not in Vrindavan. The Mughals had oppressed them. And so when Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur got there, he consolidated all the devotees, assembled them, and he worked with them to establish a community and to reestablish the mission of the Lord, this preaching mission of the Lord. So this is an example of how leadership is particularly important, even in a Vaishnava society, to keep a mission on track. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, among his many contributions, this was one contribution he made of organizing the devotees. And it so came that there was a challenge, actually, during that time. Other sampradaya, was it the Ramanuja sampradaya? They complained to the king of Jaipur that the Gaudiya Vaishnavas should not be allowed to worship Radha Govinda in the temple in Jaipur. And it was a big challenge because they came to the point where they're saying, well, actually, they're not a bona fide sampradaya. They have no commentary on Vedanta Sutra. They made all these points. And in such a situation, where do the Vaishnavas turn? Where do they turn for strength to repel such attacks? They turn to organizations. So they turned in this instance to Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, who was their leader. And although he was elderly and couldn't personally go and refute the arguments, he sent his chief disciple, Baladev Bijibhushan, and he went there and defeated this challenge from the Ramanuja Sampradaya and helped reestablish the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition. So again, organization, association, united efforts are useful in protecting and spreading Krishna consciousness. Unfortunately, this is something that has to be done again and again, because after this period where Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur reunited all the Vaishnavas, there came another period where Vaishnavism suffered and shrank from view, became perverted with different ideas. And at that time, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur came, and I think we're maybe a bit more familiar with how he worked to organize the preaching effort. His famous Namhata program became very popular. He personally established over 500 different Namhata centers on his own preaching, and it was a very organized and systematic thing. There were descriptions of the marketplace of the holy name, the names to be purchased, the various posts in the marketplace, qualifications of the participants. All these things were very, very carefully drafted and put into practice by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, again, to revive the preaching mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then we have, of course, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and his particular contribution was what? Does anybody have any idea what his particular contribution was, as all these things are building to the formation of ISKCON? Yes. Yes, he added this international idea about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. The statement was there that the Lord's name will be heard all over the world. But no one had done that. There hadn't been the organization to do that, the combined effort to do that. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did that. He sent his disciples to London. He sent them out of India to the east, to Burma, to Germany, another place in Europe. And so he added this international idea. And of course, his most famous inspiration is that he inspired Srila Prabhupada to go to the West. And on his order, Srila Prabhupada came to bring the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to parts of the world where it had not been spread before. So all these things form the backdrop, form that iceberg underneath the tip of that ceremony, that little signing ceremony that took place at 22nd Avenue. All these efforts by devotees over centuries of time came into fruition with the legal establishment of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. They're in that small little storefront in 22nd Avenue. So when we look at the history of ISKCON, and in the course of many of the different things that I hope to cover and present in terms of aspects of the history, this idea that there's more to what is seen on the surface is a very, very essential part of understanding the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Because it's not a history that's all a bed of roses. There were attempts, there were failures. One particular thing happened in India prior to Prabhupada coming to the United States is that he went to Jhansi, which I think is in UP. Isn't Jhansi in UP? It's in UP. So he went there, and he tried to start an organization there. And you could say that he failed, because he tried to start the League of Devotees there, and he was outmaneuvered by a lady that took the building that he had right from underneath him. So you could say that, in one sense, Prabhupada failed. But if we take a historical look at it, we get a different impression. Because historically, if we look back at that time, we see that that failure was good. Because if he had succeeded there, maybe he would have stayed there and not felt the impetus to come to the West. If we look back further, we see that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur told him, go to the West. He didn't tell him go to UP, small Jhansi. And so his so-called failure there led him to coming to the West, to New York City. And if you look at the documents he had there for the League of Devotees, you'll find that basically they're the same purposes for which the International Society for Krishna Consciousness was formulated. So it was like an opportunity for him to get a rough draft of the what ISKCON would look like, to try to put it in place and see how it would develop. I mean, the purposes he wrote in Bhaktigadad magazine in 1956, to propagate spiritual knowledge systematically for checking the imbalance of life to the whole race of India and all over the world, with a view to educate people in general in the techniques of spiritual life. Does that sound familiar with anybody that knows the purposes of ISKCON? It's the first purpose of ISKCON. And so his thinking was the same there. And again, so this becomes another building block towards the establishment of ISKCON in that small storefront there. Now, as far as all this relates to the Constitution, in the Constitution, we had to consider what is ISKCON. What is it? And we did this kind of research on the history of ISKCON a bit, and these things that I've been mentioning here tonight, and we came to the realization, and we put in our draft, which I hope will be in front of you sometime soon that you can give us your comments on, but we put in our draft the definition and mission of ISKCON, and I want to read that to you here so that you can see how it relates to all these points that I've been making. The definition of ISKCON we have, well, let me read the preamble first. The preamble and then the definition. They both set up what is ISKCON. Whereas the previous acharyas of the Gaudiya Sampradaya, and particularly Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the spiritual master of his dying grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, desired the propagation of Krishna consciousness all over the world for the benefit of humankind, and in fact all living entities, thus fulfilling the predictions of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that his holy name would be heard in every town and village. Whereas his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to please the previous acharyas, founded the International Society for Krishna Consciousness to systematically and cooperatively propagate Krishna consciousness on a global scale. Whereas His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, as the founder acharya of ISKCON, By his personal example, his teachings encouraged individual initiative and striving, a cooperative spirit, spiritual leadership, and service to the Vaishnavas, or devotees of Krishna. Whereas His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada created ISKCON's governing body commission to represent and execute his will, to guide the missionary activities of ISKCON, and to facilitate a structure through which his authority descends. Therefore, we, the members of the governing body commission, desiring to preserve his legacy and to please Sri Guru and Gauranga, hereby adopt a constitution for the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And then here's the definition of ISKCON. The International Society for Krishna Consciousness is a sacred mission created by its founder Acharya, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, in pursuance of the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the previous Acharyas, and given in stewardship to the followers of Srila Prabhupada, organized as an international society under the governance of the ISKCON Governing Body Commission. So a sacred mission, that is what ISKCON is. It's not necessarily a legal document, although a legal document is necessarily necessary. It's not necessarily a collection of buildings, although such buildings facilitate spreading the teachings of Krishna consciousness. But the real essence of ISKCON, at least according to our committee's understandings and deliberation, is that it's to carry on this sacred mission that was originally established by Srila Rupa Goswami. Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. A sacred mission established by Rupa Goswami, and it's all of our duties to pursue that sacred mission and push it on. And that's the purpose of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, which again is a little bit of that iceberg effect, because it's not a simple thing. We can say it, but to actually do it, we have to get into the, have to go beneath the surface and deal with that big mass that's there to push that forward, and thus we push forward ISKCON. So these are some thoughts on the history of ISKCON. Any questions or comments that anyone has?
Hare Krishna, Sesha Prabhu. I know that you are a well-experienced immigration lawyer by profession, and by devotion, you are a senior devotee, and you are the disciple of Srila Prabhupada, the founder of ISKCON. And I have a question relating to your profession and your devotion. The question is, you being an immigration lawyer, you deal with visas, green cards, and citizenship for the applicants. So when it comes to the ISKCON and the Hare Krishna movement, there are people who are beginners, who are mediocres, and who are super devotees, who are highly elevated devotees. So, who is eligible for a visa? Who is eligible for a green card? And who is eligible for a citizenship to Vaikuntha?
Well, if I knew the question that, I'd probably be there myself. I'd try to get there. But I think that based on what I made the presentation here tonight about the history of ISKCON and the mercy of the previous Acharyas and their desires and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desires, everyone has to be eligible. It's not that some are eligible and some aren't. That's Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's purpose. He's coming. He's come to break open the storehouse of love of God and give it to everyone. And so everyone is eligible. There's no bar. But people have to want it. People have to want it. I mean, a lot of people don't want to get a green card, believe it or not. A lot of people don't want a visa to the United States. And therefore, they'll never get one because they don't have the desire for it. But as long as the conditioned souls don't desire to get out of this miserable material world and go back home, back to Godhead, then they'll never be able to go. They'll never, just like Prabhupada gave the example about not being able to wake up a sleeping man. I mean, someone who's pretending to sleep. Someone that's asleep, you can wake them up. But if they're pretending to be asleep, then you can never wake them up. And so, at present, living entities in this world, the vast majority are pretending to be asleep. And as long as they keep up that pretense, they'll never be able to go back to Godhead. But those who are sincere, no matter how fallen, that's Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. No matter how fallen, those who are sincere, they can go. They can become qualified, and they will become qualified based on their desire. And so it's our mission, it's our sacred mission, ISKCON's sacred mission, to give everyone the opportunity. Therefore, no one is denied the opportunity. And our preaching endeavors are meant to be as cast as broad a net as possible. Maharaj?
Haribol, thank you for this very clear and important presentation. One question, a little concern that struck me, is that when I speak to people about ISKCON, sometimes they actually invoke what you might call the big block under the tip of the iceberg. In other words, the historical aspect of this Hare Krishna movement. That is even quoted by Prabhupada, that actually this Hare Krishna movement was started by Srila Rupa Goswami or Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. And sometimes there is a certain confusion about the definition. You gave a definition of ISKCON, but perhaps you can give what you're developing or already have developed as a definition of a member of ISKCON.
Yeah, well, that's our current stumbling block in terms of membership of ISKCON. But the main idea of our committee was, and that's something which is where we're kind of stuck right now in the process, is membership. But the main idea of our committee was that in forming a constitution for ISKCON, we want it to be as broad as possible to make the definition of a member in such a way that it's easy for people to consider themselves a member of ISKCON. For instance, if you say that a member of ISKCON follows the four regular principles and chants 16 rounds every day, then that's casting your net to a certain extent. But there may be those that would like to consider themselves members of ISKCON that don't do those things. But they're ready. They contribute to ISKCON, they participate in ISKCON, they do so many things, but they may not be ready or spiritually committed enough to come up to that standard. So do you draw a line and say that those people aren't members of ISKCON? At least in our committee, we feel not. We're trying to deal with, talk it out in our society to figure out what's the best way to go. Yeah.
Yeah, that I think is quite clear, that you don't want to cast the net too small of a net. You want a larger net so people could be members. And then getting initiated, that would be a step within the membership, of course. My concern, and forgive me if it's a little bit delicate subject, I'll try to express it in the most discreet terms possible. But in other words, is there a distinction, you might say, between the Hare Krishna movement, which was started long before Srila Prabhupada began ISKCON, and ISKCON itself? I sometimes run into situations where people even, they have different groups, and they actually put out publicity that imply that ISKCON and them are exactly the same in every way. In other words, I guess what my question boils down to, would one of the criterion of membership be that one has to accept, it doesn't mean you have to agree at every moment with the the hierarchical structure culminating in the GBC, or just say the GBC. But would a definition of a member of ISKCON mean that one has to accept the authority of the governing body commission? Again, it doesn't
absolutely
mean that you have to mean
absolutely
you have to absolutely say they're always
that
right.
Absolutely, it means that.
Okay.
The Hare Krishna movement, or Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desire to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world to every town and village, is not the exclusive mission of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. That order is given to all living beings. What does he say about the Indians? Priti-viti, say? Yes. Yeah. Well, the mission is given to everybody. ISKCON is a group of devotees who have accepted this mission coming from the acharyas, and who dedicate themselves to do that in an organized way, where there is a leadership authority. Now, that doesn't mean somebody else can't take up Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission, or that because they don't, you know, work within the confines of ISKCON, that's bad or something like that. Doesn't mean that at all. It means that's what we're doing. So we're trying to keep our own house together, and other people can get their house together, and they can do it as well. So that's my view on it. I mean, I don't think that, you know, there's some kind of monopoly here. You know, it's an opportunity for everyone, and so that's what ISKCON is designed to capture and push forward. Anything else? Anyone else? Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.